In the distant horizon outside the gates of Jerusalem, three lonely figures could be seen. The noise and excitement, shouting and chanting had all but ended. Only few remained behind to see the culmination of the events that had taken place in the city over the past few days. There were the soldiers, ever brutal, hard and callous. There were the Pharisees, jealous, full of envy and hatred. And there were the family and friends, confused, afraid and terrified. A heavy silence seemed to fill the air. In the midst of the three hung the man who had been at the center of all the tumult that had engulfed the city. Looking from a distance, he looked no different from the other two. He looked as one of the common criminals. But as we come closer, the differences become clear. His appearance was disfigured, and his form marred beyond human likeness. And yet, a sense of peace and serenity emanated from his presence. An aura of compassion and love. Above him, a superscription had been placed on his cross. The other two did not have a superscription. It was not common practice at the time to do this. And on the superscription, a title which read, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. And many who walked past that place read the superscription because it was near to the gate of the city. And the Jews were angered when they saw it. For all the hard work that they had done in trying to bring an end to the sect of this Nazarene. And now at the time when they thought they had been successful, there is this title place. It could affect all the work that they had done. Who had approved this title to be placed on the cross of this man Jesus? Well, it was Pontius Pilate. And so the Jews, in anger, put together a delegation to ask Pontius to remove the superscription. We pick up the story, brethren and sisters, if you will, in John chapter 19, where this Jewish delegation come with one more request for Pontius Pilate. He had given in to everything before. Why would he not hear their final request in John chapter 19? Then the chief priests, verse 21, of the Jews came to Pilate, and they said to him, Write not the King of the Jews, but that he said, I am the King of the Jews. Pilate answered, What I have written, I have written. Now, did you know that these were the last recorded words of Pilate? Almost if we consider them in isolation, a confession by this man, in the last words that he has to tell the Jewish leaders and he has to tell us, he teaches a lesson that I want us to focus on this morning that has many parts to it. And perhaps he tells us something about where he ended rather than where he began. As he faces this Jewish delegation, the delegation to whom he had given everything they'd asked, and at this critical moment, Pilate stands firm and says, What I have written, I have written. And notice how that when Pilate replies to the Jewish leaders, he picks up on their own words. Because they come to him and say, Write not that he is the King of the Jews, but that he said he was the King of the Jews. And Pilate returns by saying, and read it carefully, not what is written. What does he say? What I have written, I have written. Hang on a moment, whose declaration is this? The declaration that Jesus made, as the Jews would have it have been? Or is Pilate saying to them, it is I who have written it. It is I who have made the declaration that this is the King of the Jews. And what is written remains written. Well, this was something altogether different. because perhaps Pilate, in his capacity, was making a confession. And the confession was more than an acknowledgement by Pilate that this was the King of the Jews. It went further because Pilate said that he could not be changed. Everything can be changed, we're told, in this world. Pilate said, that could not be changed. I've written it and it will not be changed. Because it was the truth, you see. And the truth cannot be changed. It was the unrelenting, unmovable, unchanging truth, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. It did not matter what anyone or any group of people did. They could not change this fact. The seemingly all-powerful Jewish Sanhedrin could not change this fact. It had been written from the beginning of time, indelibly inscribed, that this man would be the King of the Jews. No wonder when John described him, he described him as the written one. We read in John chapter 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Verse 13, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory of the one and only, begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. Jesus Christ was the written one. And Pilate said that. He is the one that I have written, and it will remain written. You cannot change it, because he was written about from the very beginning. And the fact that you don't like him can't change it. The fact that he doesn't suit the way you want to live can't change it. The fact that the things that he asked you to do are not quite in keeping with what you would like to do, you can't change who he is. He is the written one. Come with me to Psalm 40, if you will, where the psalmist picks up on this lovely theme about Jesus, the one who was written about from the beginning, and speaking words that are prophetic of the Messiah. He says in verse 6, Psalm 40, sacrifice and offering you did not desire. Mine ears you have opened. Burnt offering and sin offering you have not required. Verse 7. Then said I, lo, I come. In the volume of the book it is written of me, I delight to do thy will, O my God, yea, thy law is within my heart. Here is the prophecy of Jesus, the one who was written about in the volume of the book. From beginning to end, Jesus made it clear when he came. Over 30 times he says, it is written. And he shows how he was the fulfillment of he who was written about in the volume of the book. The one whom God had placed in the very beginning to be the King of the Jews. He said to them, these are the words which I spake unto you while I was yet with you, that all things must be fulfilled which were written in the law of Moses and in the prophets and in the Psalms concerning me. No one could stop the fact that this was the King of the Jews, because the volume of the book had been written about this man. Do you know that in Luke chapter 19, when he was coming into Jerusalem and there was all the celebration, men and women shouting Hosanna to the highest, for the Son of David was entering in. And you remember how the Jews looked upon the scene, and they were full of envy. And they said to him, Master, tell these people to quieten down. How can you allow them to praise you in this way? He said, well, if they had to keep quiet, the very stones would shout. The message was this, that Jesus was trying to tell them, you cannot stop acknowledgement of the fact that I am the King of the Jews. And so it was written of him in the volume of the book. What a sobering lesson for all of us as we are assembled here this morning. We observed and are reminded of the green hill far away, and before us we see the symbols of the lonely man from Nazareth hanging on the cross. But we see the title, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. And we know it can't be changed, because we've been exposed to it. And it's been written upon our hearts. And the moment it's written on your heart, the words of Pilate come into mind. What I have written, I have written. And you cannot change this fact. It doesn't matter what you think, or where you go, or if you choose to leave this place and find another way. He remains your King. The one to whom you will have to answer. The one to whom you will have to come into company with again. He remains your king for all time. It is indelible. It is unchangeable. He is the beginning and the end, the Alpha and Omega. And it is a message which should fill our hearts with courage and fear. Courage in the knowledge that He is sure. In a world that is so full of change, so full of things that are here today and gone tomorrow, this is the fact that never changes. This is the security that we can hold on to. You remember how Isaiah describes it in his 22nd chapter, and I will fasten him as a nail in a sure place, and he shall be for a glorious stone to his father's house. This is the Jesus of Nazareth, the nail in the sure place. The security we can hold on to in a land where so much tumult is so common. But fear as well. Fear in the knowledge that once we have come to a knowledge of this King, we cannot erase it. No backspace here. No typics here. What I have written, I have written. As Peter tells us in his second letter. For if after they have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled therein and overcome, the latter end is worse with them than the beginning. For it hath been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than after they have known it to turn from the holy commandment delivered unto them. The powerful message that when you come into contact with the King, you can never lose that contact. But what a courageous declaration, don't you think, from Pilate? Now the word written is also got the idea of a declaration. What I have declared, says Pilate. The man who had washed his hands of the scene suddenly is no longer washing his hands. He's making declarations. The record in John tells us this, that he recorded the declaration in three languages, Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. And we should say, well, why did you do that, Pilate? If you were trying to show the Jews that this was the man who had claimed to be the King of the Jews, why not just write it in Hebrew? Surely this was just a Hebrew matter. It was all to do with the Jews, their king, their leaders, their people. Why write it in three languages? Perhaps because Pilate wanted more than the Jews to know who this man was. You see, the Latin and the Greek represented the Gentiles at that time. It wasn't just a declaration for the Jews, it was for the Gentiles as well. Jesus, you know, brethren and sisters, was declared or confessed to be King of the Jews on only two occasions. Once at his birth and once at his death. In Matthew chapter 2, we read the first declaration, if you'll come there. Matthew chapter 2. We know the passage well. Matthew 2, verse 1. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, where is he that is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. The first declaration of Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews, made by the wise men. Notice the interesting part there. We would have all come and said, where is he that is born to be King of the Jews? But the wise men said, where is he that is born King of the Jews? Why? Because it was his birthright. It wasn't something that he was going to get at some later stage. He was born King of the Jews. Son of Abraham, son of David. The promised seed, 2 Samuel chapter 7. Here he was, born King of the Jews. What a declaration they had made. But it was also his death rite. What do you mean? What was it about Jesus that made him King of the Jews at his death? Well, whereas he was born King of the natural Jews as son of David, he died King of the spiritual Jews. Paul tells us this. He says, for we are all, when we are baptized, we all put on Christ. There's neither bond nor free, Jew nor Greek, but ye are all one in Christ Jesus. as this man is upon the cross, he becomes king of the natural and the spiritual Jews, the new seed of Abraham. No wonder then, when Pilate puts the inscription on the title, it's in three languages, as testimony to the fact that this man was now king of both natural and spiritual Jews. The other interesting point, brethren and sisters, is that both these declarations were made by Gentiles. The Jews never admitted, not one of them, that he was the king of the Jews. What an incredible thing. The very nation to whom he had come to become their king could not see that this was their king. Pilate said, "Behold, your king." "We have no king but Caesar," they said. Oh, they were right, but they were very wrong as well. You see, Caesar was their master and their lord. It was his principles and his ways that they enjoyed. It was his laws that they wanted to operate under. But Jesus was their king. They couldn't change that. It was his birthright and it would be his deathright. And there was nothing they could do about it. Well, brethren and sisters, how does that make us feel? If the very people that Jesus, who was their king, could not identify and confess that he was and acknowledge him as such, is it not true that we can fall into exactly the same trap? Is it not true that we as spiritual Jews may find ourselves in this complex world worshipping Caesar and disowning our king? Not just in the things that we say, but certainly in the way that we live, in the choices that we make, in the places that we go to, in the friends that we keep, in the job offers that we take, in the way that we speak. Continuously disowning the one who is our king in favor of the one that we would be, have to be, our master. But you see, it's far more subtle than that, as it was for the Jews. We with hindsight look back on it and we see black and white. But life isn't like that, is it? It's about the pieces of color between, the grays. And this is what confused the Jews, because when Caesar presented himself in all the different forms of color that he presented himself in, and when Jesus presented himself, they could not really tell the difference as clearly as we can now as we look back. And yet in our own life, in the context of the things that we find ourselves in, we have the same problem. We are confused by this world's great paradoxes. The packaging of the world, that when we look at it, it looks awesome and there should be nothing wrong with it. And yet, as Jesus said, inside they are dead men's bones. Our age is an age of paradox, which is continuously trying to make us select Caesar over Jesus. We have taller buildings but shorter tempers, wider freeways but narrower viewpoints. We spend more but have less. We buy more but enjoy it less. We have bigger houses and therefore smaller families. More conveniences but less time. We have more degrees but less sense. More knowledge but less judgment. More experts but more problems. More medicine but less wellness. We spend too recklessly, laugh too little, drive too fast, get too angry too quickly, stay up too late, get up too tired, read too seldom, watch TV too much, and pray too seldom. We have multiplied our possessions but reduced our values. We talk too much, love too seldom, and lie too often. We've learned how to make a living but not a life. We've added years to life but not life to years. We've been all the way to the moon and back but have trouble crossing the street to meet the new neighbor. We've conquered outer space but not inner space. We've done larger things but not better things. We've cleaned up the air but polluted the soul. We've split the atom but not our prejudice. We write more but learn less, plan more but accomplish less. We've learned to rush but not to wait. We have higher incomes but lower morals. More food but less appeasement. More acquaintances but fewer friends. More effort but less success. We build more computers to hold more information, to produce more copies than ever, but have less communication. We become long on quantity, but short on quality. These are the times of fast food and slow digestion, tall men and short characters, steep profits and shallow relationships. These are the times of world peace but domestic warfare, more leisure and less fun, more kinds of food but less nutrition. These are the days of two incomes but more divorce, of fancier houses but broken homes. This is the world of Caesar, brethren and sisters. The great paradox of our age. And as with the Jews, as with us, it confuses us. And we lose sight of the superscription written above his cross. Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. And Pilate said, not that he was a king of the Jews, but the Greek gives us the definite article. This is the King of the Jews. Not a man who came along in some point in time and claim kingship, but this is the man who is the King of the Jews. This morning and every Sunday morning, we are given a wonderful opportunity to remind ourselves of this. In the confusion and paradox of our age, Jesus has put in place a memorial feast. And as we gather here together and we think of the green hill far away, and the scenes of that tragic event, lift up your head and look above him and see what it says. For therein written in Hebrew, Greek and Latin, and whichever language you might want it written in, is the confession, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. Behold your King. What I have written, I have written.